It's wintertime in Kansas, and Lyle Pantel wants you to stay safe. The Assistant Director of Fire and Emergency Management stops by to share tips with us on winter safety on this edition of the Post Podcast. We've got some very important things we want to talk about today.
Yes.
Winter driving tips. Yes. First off, because today, like, oh my gosh. It was raining when I went to bed last night. I don't know how cold it got overnight, but it wasn't supposed to go freezing, but it was still slick because of all the moisture and the, I guess snow on top of the water, on top of the ice, on top of more water.
Yes.
So you want to tell us a little bit about how to avoid, running into problems on that kind of weather?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that, that we like to suggest is know your car. Not every vehicle is the same. Some have different safety features built in, anti-lock brakes, electronic traction control, those early warning detections for the self-braking that some vehicles have. So know what your car has and how it operates in these wintry conditions. Next, if you're going to be traveling, if you have to travel when it's wintry out, make sure you stock your vehicle with the appropriate supplies should you get stuck somewhere or have a longer than normal travel due to those winter weather conditions. Make sure you have the snow shovel to clear out any snow that you may get stuck in. Have some sort of abrasive material such as sand or cat litter or like I said, an abrasive material that can give your car some traction. Should you need that little bit of extra grip for those tires to get out of a situation that could get worse if you are stranded there. And always plan your travel route. Look ahead for information regarding weather outside of the area that you may be traveling to, the road conditions, and any warnings in those areas.
Yeah, and one of the things I've seen recently is there's an app if you're traveling, and I don't remember the name of it. I'm sure you could Google it, but it would tell you, like, say I want to go to, Albuquerque. I can plug that into this app, and it will tell me along the way what the weather's going to look like if I go this way or that way. So if you're trying to avoid winter weather like this, maybe check into something like that as well.
Yeah, staying ahead of the weather is always the best course of action because then you can potentially avoid it altogether. Because there's obviously many different routes to go to all these wonderful places the United States has to offer, and picking one route over another might cause you to go through a severe rainstorm, while another one might cause you to go through an ice storm. It just depends on where your location is. And if you're more comfortable driving in one situation versus the other, then that's obviously the route that you should lean towards. So some other things that you can do as far as checking your vehicle, making sure it's ready for that winter weather, is the battery power. Most people know as the temperature gets colder, battery power drops with the temperature, as do tire pressures. So it's a good thing to keep an eye on those. Because obviously properly inflated tires will help you gain traction. Traction amounts to more steering ability, which helps you avoid crashes and whatnot. Another thing a lot of people don't think about is all these aftermarket floor mats that we have nowadays. Make sure they're installed properly, because if they move around or if you get into a situation where you're moving around your feet a lot, if you push that floor mat up under the brake pedal or the accelerator, you could make a bad situation worse by not being able to operate those pedals.
There were some crashes a few years ago. I think it was Toyotas that had a problem with that, right?
You know, I can't recall directly, but I'm sure it's happened a time or two. And if it's something that a traveler can avoid, why not take those precautions beforehand rather than getting in that situation?
Yeah. Like, I know in our car, there's a little clip that the mat actually slides into to prevent it from doing that. It drives my wife crazy. She's always taking the clip, taking it off. And I'm like, no, because that's exactly why that clip is there. It's to keep it from getting under your pedal or tied up in your pedal or,
Yes, and then some of them have Velcro nowadays, and if you have that fabric interior on the floor, that floor mat will grab to that, put that Velcro and just kind of be stuck there. It's handy. It's not handy. It just depends on how you look at it. It's just one more hassle to go through if you're trying to clean, but yet on the safety side, it's keeping your floor mat from moving about in the cabin.
Yeah, staying safe should always be the priority, I think, right?
Yes, definitely. And the biggest thing about your car is you are the biggest safety factor in your car. Knowing your car, knowing how it operates, knowing what to do and when is of utmost importance.
Excellent. Any more car safety tips? I know we want to get into some household prep as well.
Yeah, no more car safety. Let's move on to a house prep. So the biggest thing I think that people need to understand is watches and warnings, the difference between the two. So when and this applies to thunderstorms, winter weather, any kind of weather advisory that comes out about watches, warnings are included. So a watch means there's a potential for something to happen, such as heavy snow or significant accumulations of snow, whereas a warning is that storm is actually producing what was predicted in a watch. So if it says there's a watch out for 6 to 10 inches of snow, then that means it could be possible. Whereas a warning means the storm is producing this much snow in these areas. So a little word of advice to watch out for those keywords. And then next would be how to get the house ready. So staying indoors is obviously a good thing. If you don't need to travel, don't walk carefully on the snowy or icy walkways. Keep dry and change out of wet clothes often, because that just sucks the heat out of your body, potentially exposing you to hypothermia. And we know that's no one ever wants to get hypothermia intentionally. The other thing is winterizing your home is getting the walls, attics, all those things properly insulated. Clear out any of your rain gutters over the fall. People don't think about it. Leaves, if you have leaves or trees around your house, they get into the gutters, clog it up. You have ice where it potentially wouldn't be should the downspouts be unclogged, which could prevent those slips and falls. You want to maintain your heating equipment, such as your furnace or your chimney, should you use that for a main heating source. Make sure you're having those checked by a service professional. Make sure they're operating at peak. Learn how to shut off water valves if that's something that you have a problem with, because when they crack, you don't want the situation to get worse by the water to keep flowing.
Right.
We don't need any extra problems. It's already bad enough when a pipe bursts, especially if it's in a finished part of your home, because that's just more things that you have to deal with. So knowing how to shut off valves and where to shut them off at is key. Carbon monoxide is another problem, especially in homes around the wintertime, because we're running more of those devices that use gas as their source of power. And if they're not burning that gas off efficiently, there's a carbon monoxide buildup in the house. So staying protected from that involves having a carbon monoxide detector on each level of your home, just one. We don't need to overdo it. Try and avoid the areas where the carbon monoxide levels would be the highest, because there is always just a little minute level in your house. So if you put that detector in the room where, say, your furnace and your water heater are, its potential to go off is going to be higher than if you put it out where people are actually going to be spending their time. So a proper placement is big for that. And then back to the slips and falls on the unnecessary ice, if we can do that. Some of the things that people use, we like to use the ice melt or sodium chloride. But what people forget is that actually takes just a little bit of moisture to activate that melting process with basically salt.
Mm-hmm.
That's only going to work down to about the high 20s. After that, you're going to need something else, which is why they do it on the roads with that liquid treatment of the mag chloride or calcium chloride, because it has a little bit of moisture content to it which causes that melting reaction to occur. And then if the salt or the sodium chloride looks like it's too expensive for you, you can always cut it with another abrasive material such as that cat litter or sand to help stretch it a little further. Plus, that abrasive material gives you a little bit more traction for walking on.
Yeah, we were at my in-law's house a little while back, and they didn't have any of the regular, you know, ice melt. And they had done wood shavings and, like, kosher salt, which worked. You know, I was laughing at her. I'm like, that's just going to make it worse. But no, it melted. I mean, obviously the salt helped melt the ice off, but the wood kept it nice and gritty.
Yep.
And it wasn't nearly as slick as I imagined it was going to be.
Yep. And then that wood, if it was dry when they put it down, helps absorb some of that extra moisture that comes off. So it's not sitting there on, you know, whatever the surface is that might be slick that it could freeze to again. And if you can do that, a couple treatments of that, brush it out of the way so it doesn't become a too accumulated and become a problem. That's definitely, if someone has other tips other than what I've said already, I mean, stick to what works for you.
I think you can always get online and find you've got the list here. I'm sure there's lists like that you could find. Just Google it. But the important thing is have a plan, be prepared, and be ready rather than wait to the last second and
wait
for the nightmare to happen.
That tends to be the trend, is we wait until we're on the eve of a problem when we decide to take action. And if we can stay a couple steps ahead of that point and be better prepared, obviously, we're going to have less problems because we're going to know what to do, when to do it, and have the necessary tools or remedies for those problems.
Absolutely. Well, we've got about a minute left. I know there was one other thing we wanted to squeak in, and that's space heater safety, because a lot of people are using those right now, especially when it's getting down into the, you know,
tens homes, overnight. Offices, your business. They're used all over. So the biggest thing is make sure that they're plugged into a GFCI outlet.
That's the one with the little switch in the middle that you can reset.
Yes. It's got a ground fault interrupter built into it. So if there's a surge from the heater side or from the power supply side, it can trip that and kill the power to it.
Kind of like a breaker box right there in the outlet for you.
Yes. And you want to make sure that you plug that device directly into the outlet that you want to utilize. Try and avoid plugging them into the surge protectors because they draw enough power typically that it's better to have it in the actual outlet itself. Another thing that people forget to is keep it clear of any obstructions, anything that can burn, keep it at least 3 feet away. That way you allow it to do the heating and you're keeping any sources of ignition and potential fire problems out of the area. Don't cover up the cord. I know they're kind of unsightly. They don't work for some people's home decor, but don't cover up the cord. It needs to be exposed. It allows heat to dissipate should the cord get hot for any reason.
And, you know, one thing, a lot of them have like a kill switch in them where if they fall, they will shut off.
Yes.
But don't count on that.
Don't always expect those things to work as intended. It's always good if you're using a space heater to be in the room that it is in, and when you're no longer in that room, shut it off, because obviously you don't need to add extra heat to somewhere that you're not going to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, we the reason you made me think of the tip over thing. We tried that. Someone else had mentioned that a while back, and we have another DJ that comes in here, and I was telling her, I'm like, hey, did you know those will shut off when they tip over? She's like, really? And she tried to tip it over and it didn't.
It didn't.
It just kept on going right here on the floor. And I'm like, you know, maybe we should pick that up now.
Just some of those safety features that they come on them, make sure that they're actually going to operate when they need to. You can go ahead and test them out. That's fine. Another thing that you can do is buy ones that have timers in them as well. That way, if you forget to shut it off, it's on a timer. It goes off when you're out of the room. You don't have that extra guilt of knowing that it was on.
Excellent advice. Well, we are out of time. Anything else you want to try to squeak in before we go?
stay safe, plan some extra travel time in wintry conditions.